Welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome to the political cesspool radio program. Here we are again. Saturday, August 22nd, we are live from the studios of AM 1380 WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, broadcasting around the world on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org, and of course, going out to our AM and FM affiliate stations and satellite as well, thanks to the Liberty News Radio Network. We have got a fantastic show lined up for you tonight. Throughout the course of the next 3 hours, you will hear from Dr. F. Roger Devlin, one of our favorites. He's going to be on to talk about the effects of radical feminism, how the males have been emasculated, and what's going on in the world of dating. F. Roger Devlin with us during the first hour tonight. In the second hour, Carlton Huffman of Pat Buchanan's American Cause Organization will be on to pick up where we left off last week with Dr. Virginia Abernathy as we discuss immigration. Big treat tonight during the third hour as we will hear from Officer Drew Lackey, the Montgomery, Alabama police officer who arrested and fingerprinted Rosa Parks. He's going to give you another view of the civil rights movement. That's the title of his book, and what a treat that's going to be to hear from him again this evening. More details on that forthcoming. But first things first, let's dive right into the political cesspool this evening. My good friend, compatriot, and co-host Keith Alexander in with me. Keith, how's it going tonight?
Everything's great. I tell you, with a lineup like that, I wish I could hang around for 3 hours tonight.
I know. You know, Keith, what can we do? The political cesspool, I tell you, it continues to impress me. I impress myself. The guests impress me, but what really impresses me are the number of listeners out there who give us their love and support. And we're going to read a couple of letters we received from different supporters of the show before this segment concludes. But you're right, Keith. Absolutely stellar lineup this evening. All-star cast, as always. And we've even got some news to report on. In between all of those great guests, we're going to be tackling the headlines. And to start things off, I say on a trivial or a lighter side, we always like to try to start the program off with a little bit of trivial news, but I don't guess this is that trivial. But I am going to give you, if you read the blog today, you'll know, 365 more reasons not to eat at McDonald's. Now, as we said, no one should be eating at McDonald's if they want to stay healthy. But if you've been meaning to quit eating there, but you just haven't got around to it yet, I'm going to give you right now a live report on the latest affront to white people from the Golden Arches. It's called, Keith, 365black.com. And this is what McDonald's says on that website. At McDonald's, we believe that African-American culture and achievement should be celebrated 365 days a year, not just during Black History Month. That's the idea behind 365black.com. It's a place where you can learn more about education, employment, career advancement, and entrepreneurship opportunities, and meet real people whose lives have been touched by McDonald's. Plus, you can also have a chance at winning a once-in-a-lifetime I don't know how you can win a once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, but that's what the website says. So anyway, it says go there, visit often. You might just get expired. So, Keith, here's your assignment from the headquarters of the Political Cesspool. I want you to keep tabs, keep your ear to the ground, and let me know when McDonald's puts up 365white.com to celebrate white culture and achievement all year long. How long do you think we'll be waiting for that, Keith?
Well, we'll be waiting till hell freezes over. And see, this is, you know, McDonald's has chosen their side in the culture war. And we need to choose our side in the fast food wars. You know, basically, we need to stop supporting these corporate giants that keep trying to promote black people above white people. You know, this is, I've heard it said before that the only sound a liberal truly fears is the sound of a closing purse. So boycott McDonald's. Let them, if they want black customers who are 13% of the U.S. population and they want to turn their backs on white customers and the aspirations of white people who make up 65% or more of the population of the United States, let them do it and we'll see them shortly in bankruptcy.
You're hitting the nail on the head with regard to this pathetic pandering that we see by all the major corporations and, of course, the federal government. I am not out to offend anyone, and certainly, you know, their money spends just as good as ours. But what I'm saying is, how much buying power can 12% of the population have? Why are they only going after that 12%? How much buying power can they have against the rest of us? I don't understand.
Also supposedly, but, according to this report, poorer than the other parts of the American population. So if you're a businessman and you're acting rationally, would you focus all your attention on the poorest 13% of the population and ignore the more prosperous 87% of the population? But that is what places like Pepsi, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, IBM, Microsoft, all of these companies do.
They are so enamored in having a seat at the politically correct or cultural Marxist table that they will absolutely, I mean, they don't even know why they're doing this. I mean, they absolutely have no idea.
Well, they're apparently addle-headed, or they are counting on white people not having any sense of racial solidarity and not being offended by a program like this, which apparently is going to focus all of their charitable efforts and scholarship monies and things like this towards the black community, while they make the majority of their money, obviously. The white community.
And that's what we're saying. It just doesn't make sense. It's perverted. And now, perhaps it would make sense for an independent McDonald's franchise in South Memphis to open up a website such as this. But for the international franchise as a whole, absolutely preposterous and ridiculous, and is truly an affront to everyone who is not black. I mean, this pandering and this preferential treatment is not going to stand here in the political cesspool. I guess, you know, I don't know if any of the other chains are better. At least Chick-fil-A is a Christian firm that closes on Sundays, so maybe spend your dollars at Chick-fil-A.
Well, I imagine that, like a lot of Christian churches, they've been infected with the social gospel, too, and we can expect it. But basically, just like they tell us, just say no to drugs, I suggest that people in this audience just say no to McDonald's. And let them reap the harvest that they've sown.
Well, anybody who gets hungry as they boycott McDonald's, just go over to Keith's Kitchen and
go to Wendy's. Go somewhere else, and you know, if Wendy's comes out with a similar program, boycott them too. But you know, McDonald's has been at the forefront of this. You know, they give preference to franchisees who are black. They don't make them pay the normal fees, or they give away the franchise where they would make a white entrepreneur spend, you know, out the wazoo in order to get a similar franchise. And we had one in Memphis. Unfortunately, it closed up. They had a place down at South Parkway and Bellevue, which was a huge McDonald's, and they had other ones, and those things just don't seem to operate at a profit. You know, maybe the market is trying to tell McDonald's something, but McDonald's apparently has something on their mind other than making money. You know, it's like Pat Buchanan said in Death of the West, basically, our elites have taken to political correctness like catnip. And, you know, it's suicidal. We wonder why our economy is in a tailspin. We wonder why we have the financial problems that America has nowadays. And you don't need to look any further than this type of program by McDonald's. It is absolute, utter, and rank foolishness. And, you know, they'll probably be sitting around scratching their heads wondering why they've gone bankrupt someday.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is our people should demand that corporations and organizations cater to our interests as well as everyone else's, and
or
not
at the very
everyone
least
else
be
except our own,
objective
right
and fair with everybody. But this pandering and this, which is an affront to, you know, that there are no scholarships, for example, available through, you know, the charitable networks for white working class and middle class children trying to go to college, because they've all been commandeered and hijacked by these race hustlers like the ones at McDonald's.
Well, that's, listen, we wanted to get that out here at the top because it's about dinner time here in Memphis. It's 6 p.m. this Saturday evening. And if you're listening anywhere else in the country, it's either getting close to dinner time or just past it on the East Coast. So don't go to McDonald's tonight if you're listening to the political cesspool. That's the story. But anyway,
don't go to McDonald's is the story. You know, let them reap the harvest that they've sown for themselves. You know, if they don't want your business, and that's what they're telling you, don't give it to them. Quite frankly, it's pretty pathetic to go to McDonald's for your Saturday evening meal anyway.
Well, we could always go to Coletta's like we went to, Keith, on Wednesday, have a good Italian dinner if you so choose. But anyway, that's the story, top of the gates, right out of the right out of the gates from the political cesspool this evening, but a lot more stuff and perhaps even more serious things forthcoming this evening, as you'll hear from Dr. F. Roger Devlin, Carlton Huffman, and Officer Drew Lackey before the clock runs out this evening. And we're going to read some emails and letters from you as well, maybe take a couple of phone calls. And we're going to be going back to the blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org. Of course, there we provide with links and references, documentation to all of the stories that we cover on this radio program. So if you want more information about anything you hear on the radio, go to that website and there you will find it. I'm James Edwards, joined tonight by Keith Alexander. We are just getting started. When we come back right after these words from our sponsors, you're going to be hearing Dr. F. Roger Devlin. Stay tuned, everybody.
There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
And the battle of the sexes and reproduction in the family.
And that's
Welcome
what I want
to get on the Political Cesspool. Call us on James's dime, toll free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, here we go. I hope you're buckled in and saddled up tight, everyone. Our first of three featured guests this evening is on the line with us now. His name is Dr. F. Roger Devlin. But before I turn it over to my colleague, Keith Alexander, for Dr. Devlin's official introduction, I would like to quickly digress before we do anything else and read this letter that came into the mail to the Political Cesspool this week. We are absolutely blessed, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart with all sincerity, to have such a great working relationship and friendship with so many listeners around the world. And I got this letter today, and I just felt compelled to read it on the air right out of the get-go this evening. It's written from a listener in Arkansas, and here's what he writes. Dear Mr. Edwards, thank you for being a voice for white America. I was looking forward to meeting you again at the CFCC conference in Jackson, Mississippi this past June. The day before the meeting, I rode down from my home in Arkansas by motorcycle. I checked into the Super 8 and then went and found the meeting place. I was eating at a catfish place on County Line Road when my dad called and said my mom had to be picked up by ambulance. I rushed right back home and sat with her until July 5th, where at 10:42 she passed away, bad lungs from years of smoking. Anyway, I just wanted you to know that I sure hated to miss the meeting. During that time I was with my mom, we didn't say much. She couldn't speak. James, I know someday in the future some chump is going to tell my grandchildren that my mother and all of those who lived during her time are at fault. They will be told that all the stumbling that the minorities do is because my mom and people who lived in her time put stumbling blocks in front of them. I would not delay protecting my mom's name against such talk. But where do we draw the line? Do not all of our kin, past and present, deserve the same? Well, I know what your answer to that is, and I thank you. Keith, that's what it's all about. I mean, that community bond, that bond with your family. Certainly, Brian, I would do anything to defend your mother's honor and the honor of all of those who have come before us, all of those who are still to come down our lines. And we will stand up to protect their dignity. I have hope that that day that you envision will not manifest itself, that we can do something to stop it. And I hope and pray that this show is somehow on the front lines. But I just wanted to read that out to let Brian know that our sympathies go out with him and his family after just losing, obviously, a very important figure in their family. God bless you and keep you, my friend. And we're with you 100%. If there's anything we can do to help, you just let us know. And Keith, that being said, please introduce our next guest.
Well, you know, that letter is kind of an artifact of what we do this program for, Voice in the Wilderness. And we are providing information and an outlook that I don't think is going to be available in very many places today because of the monopoly that the left has. And that monopoly affects every aspect of our life, including the family, the nuclear family, dating, male-female relationships, and ultimately reproduction. And Roger Devlin is the resident expert here at the Cesspool and elsewhere in the world on the negative impact of liberalism on those aspects of our life. Dr. Devlin is writes for The Last Ditch. He's an educator, and his writings, if you haven't read them before, I invite you to check out Google The Last Ditch and find his name on the masthead, and then go down from that, read his articles, and they're incredible. They're incredibly insightful, and unfortunately, there's no aspect of our life that has not been poisoned and diminished by liberalism. And Dr. Devlin, that's why we have you on the Political Cesspool tonight.
Hi, I'm glad to be here again.
Always great to have you, Roger. And let's not forget, in addition to being an author, he is a very renowned social commentator on these issues, Keith, that you just mentioned, and I believe that's what we're going to be talking to Roger about this evening, revisiting an interview that he had with us some months ago on the effects of radical feminism and how it affects sexual relationships between man and woman, the emasculation of our males in general, and we'll get even a lot more specific. So, Keith, where should we begin tonight on such a broad and appealing subject?
Well, first of all, feminism is just another aspect of liberalism. You know, just like the sexual revolution is just another aspect of liberalism. None of these programs, things like no-fault divorce or radical feminism, was the brainchild of the John Birch Society or any other right-wing organization. They've all been foisted upon us by the left. Dr. Devlin, am I correct?
Essentially so, yes, yes. Yes, and when you release individual desire to go wherever it wants without guidance, you get a new equilibrium. You don't get chaos. A lot of people think there's simply chaos in the dating world now, the mating world. They think that it's entirely promiscuous, but it actually isn't. There is a certain pattern that evolves where the women are free to go after the best-looking men, and the best-looking men and the most successful men are not removed from the mating pool through marriage to a particular woman, so they are free for other women to mate with. So the society becomes polygamous. That's the basic.
What you said in your article, Sexual Power and Utopia, is basically that women, freed from the bonds of traditional marriage and traditional mores regarding sexual relationships, have proven themselves not to be naturally monogamous, but to be naturally what you call hypergamous. In other words,
yes.
They revert to the tactics of a baboon pack, where men struggle to get, where the males struggle to get to the top, and women mate with the top male.
Yes.
You mentioned things like Cosmopolitan magazine. If you read Cosmopolitan magazine, you think that women were working themselves up into a lather to make themselves attractive to men, generally, but instead, you very insightfully pointed out that what they're actually doing is trying to make themselves attractive to a very small number of alpha males at the top of the pack.
Yes, and that language, you hear that popularly now. Alpha male comes from the study of animal behavior. It comes from the study of mammal packs and other types of animals that have this mating structure.
And, of course, the genius of Western civilization and of civilization generally is that rather than allowing ourselves to behave in this animalistic fashion, this hypergamy, instead what we do is we provide a system, monogamy, where there's one man, one woman, and as a result there are females and for the males and males for the females.
Right.
Across
the
entire
spectrum. For every boy there's a girl.
Every woman has a man who is devoted to her and their offspring. His efforts are exclusively devoted to her in raising their children, and that works far and above to the better interests of the vast majority of women in the world rather than trying to mate with some sperm donor alpha male who moves on to the next conquest.
Just the other day, I got a call from a mainstream publication, which I won't name, but asking for an interview about my ideas. Apparently, they're getting a lot of discussion on the internet. So I talked to a lady. I did an interview. Maybe it'll come out in a few weeks as an article. About the lady was interested in the phenomenon of game. I wonder if either of you gentlemen have heard of game, or the pickup community, as it's called. There are now
I'm out of that loop.
Yeah, okay. There are now, since courtship rituals and marriage have broken down, there have gotten to be a number of gurus who teach men, you know, how to pick up girls for the night, which essentially amounts to trying to fool women into thinking that you are a socially dominant alpha male and so forth. And this can be done in various ways. And there's now a whole industry,
hey,
apparently.
Dr. Devlin, if you don't mind, let's pause it right there. We're going to pick up at the very exact word you're leaving off at. We do have to take a break. We're going to revisit this interview, revisit this topic when we continue with Roger Devlin. The game, dating, male and female relationships, and the significance of it with regards to the culture war when we return right after this.
The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
You are neck deep in the political cesspool. Welcome back to our show. I'm your host, James Edwards, joined in studio tonight by my co-host, Keith Alexander, and joined from suburban D.C. by F. Roger Devlin. Dr. Devlin is talking with us tonight about the effects of radical feminism on male and female relationships, how it affects dating and reproduction, and the significance of all of this in the greater culture war that we all find ourselves faced with. Dr. Devlin, before we went to that last break, you were letting us know that you had an interview with a major publication about this very issue. You were talking that they mentioned The Game, and I'm 29 years old, so I'm not too far removed from what was called The Game. I'm now married, but don't hate the player, hate the game. That's something you always hear said. One of the biggest shows on VH1 in recent years was a show called... I'm not even sure the name of it, but it starred a guy that just goes by the name of Mystery, and he wrote a book called The Mystery Method, which he used the show to promote. And the subtitle of The Mystery Method was How to Attract Any Girl and Get Them in Bed That Night. Yeah. So this is what basically is being stressed. Girls go after alpha males. Males go after cheap sex. Yeah. Continue on with what you were talking about, Dr. Devlin.
Yes, he's one of the main authors. There is actually a book called The Game by Neil Strauss, and there's even one with a rather indelicate title of Bang, I believe, More Lays in 60 Days. And there's a whole library of these books now that are based on sociobiology, like evolutionary biology, and teach guys not how to court a good wife who will become a good mother, but how to score with as many chicks as possible at the bar scene by posing as these so-called alpha male, as a man with high status, and it involves dress and behavior.
Right to the chase on that. I know exactly all that you need to know about that. I've told Dr. Devlin over the break, wear a white coat and a stethoscope.
Because it might work. It might work as long as the Obama medical plan doesn't get passed.
Because that'll make the medical profession, if he has his way, I'm afraid.
That's right. That'll make the doctors into sort of low level government bureaucrats, and we'll have to find something else, I guess.
Well, I guess the point, Dr. Devlin, that we're trying to reach or stress at least isn't that sex is cheap, but the. I guess what is the significance is the question of how this plays into reproduction and meaningful relationships and what's
and
the
stable
ramifications
family.
Of this?
Well, it's going to mean fewer births, and I'm afraid the whole game phenomenon is primarily white, it's just going to I'll tell you what I expect to happen actually. I don't think it's possible that all men are going to become gamesters and all women are going to become bar sluts. I expect what's going to happen is that on the margins of American society, you have some very conservative religious groups, and that these people are going to become the parents of the next generation. They're going to go right on having big families like the Grutters out in Arkansas with their 17, 18 babies.
That's right.
And the people, the gamesters, the pickup artists, are just going to end up not reproducing.
Well, that's what it, bringing that brings to mind the fact that this has been a long-standing policy of the left. You know, back in the 50s, one of the primary, in fact, the primary exponent of cultural Marxism in America, Herbert Marcuse,
yes,
wrote a book called Eros and Civilization, in which,
yes,
he said that the traditional nuclear family and monogamy was a trap set for women and children by,
yeah,
white males to,
yeah,
enslave them. And if women wanted to be truly free, they would reject monogamy and live sexual lives of what he called polymorphous perversity. And by that he meant,
yes,
non-procreative sex. Sex,
right,
for pleasure, but not for reproduction. And, you know, it's just amazing. That must have sounded very bizarre and extreme to the Leave It to Beaver generation back in the,
yeah,
50s when it was first announced. But look at what has transpired in the interim, and what you're describing right now is the perfect coming to fruition of Marcuse's plan.
Is that the culprit, Dr. Devlin? Is that ethos the culprit, that along with the tenets of radical feminism, is that is what manifested,
well,
this perversion in dating in this day and age?
No, it's a very complicated thing. I doubt whether Herbert Marcuse's direct influence was all that important. I think it's a product of the decline of the churches and the availability,
obviously,
the
destruction
of birth
or the
control and cheap publications like Playboy and Cosmo.
And then all of this, of course, deconstructs the nuclear family, which obviously without a strong,
yeah,
nuclear family, you are more susceptible to this sort of behavior.
There are certain partial historical precedents for it. I mean, in ancient Rome, among the aristocrats in the late Roman Empire and among the aristocrats in France on the eve of the French Revolution, in a lot of number of decadent societies, you'll find the upper classes behaving in this way. What's unique to our time is how generalized it's become, and even people without means are doing this. You find the decadence of the French and Roman aristocracy even in among lower middle class people.
Well, you know, it was also, I was just reading an article on the decline of American society keyed to Edward Gibbon's Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Yes.
And they pointed that out, you know, that
oh, yes,
was one of the preconditions, and it said none of these preconditions, like, for example, staffing the Roman army with Germanic barbarians, for example, alone,
yes,
would have caused the decline, but that the confluence of all of these factors, like, for example, the sexualization and the non-procreative sex emphasis,
mm-hmm,
that you just described in the late Roman Empire, together with all of these other factors, basically brought Rome down. And,
yes,
you know, it's doing the same thing to Western civilization and the so-called American Empire as well right now.
Yes. As I just said, you can see an analogy with Christianity in late antiquity and Christianity today. In fact, I just said that religiously conservative people are the most fertile now, and that was also true in Rome, and it was through Christianity, with its rather strict sexual requirements, that civilization was able to outlast the Roman Empire, was able to continue when Rome fell. And so,
well, of course,
I think Western civilization will survive the fall of the American Empire, too.
Liberalism has had a negative effect.
Hey, Keith, repeat
on the church
what you
as
said.
Well.
You came in a little light.
Yeah, I was going to say that, of course, then you had a full-bodied Christian church. Now we have a Christian church that has been compromised by liberalism. You know, the social gospel,
yes,
and doing good deeds in the ghetto seems to be the ultimate expression of Christianity nowadays. And I don't see, you know, at least in many churches, particularly mainline Protestant churches and the Roman Catholic Church of America, much opposition to these cultural currents you're talking about.
No, well, not among the mainstream denominations, but that's why they're losing members.
Exactly. Somebody told me that if they continued like they were, that basically they would wither and die and they would be populated exclusively by vegetarians and college professors.
yeah.
But, Dr. Devlin, I always enjoy the opportunity to have these conversations with you about this particular subject. As you know, there are any number of political issues and cultural issues that we address on this program, but you would probably be better and able to articulate exactly why this is so important. Why are we spending 45 minutes tonight on this radio program talking about radical feminism and its effects on sexual relations? Why is that so important, and why does it need to be fixed,
It touches the most intimate aspects of our lives, and in a way that issues such as free trade and immigration don't always. I'm amazed myself when I write something on this subject. It always gets 20 times as much attention as when I write on some other historical subject or some other. It's something that's very close to us. It hits us in our, you know, in our families, in where our deepest attachments lie.
And
no, I think
Anna's book, The Death of the West, pointed this out, how in Europe and America, the white birth rate is declining precipitously, and of course it's not declining in the non-white population throughout the world. You know, back in the 70s, I think it was, Paul Ehrlich wrote the book, The Population Bomb, in which he, said that there's going to be dire consequences unless people limited their reproduction. And of course, the only people that took heart or heed to that message were whites.
Hey, Keith. Hold it right there, gentlemen. We got to take another commercial timeout. We'll be back with more with Dr. F. Roger Devlin. We're talking about feminism and more when the Political Cesspool returns.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
In the last segment, our guest, Roger Devlin, commented that on all the issues that he chooses to write about, this is the issue that gets the highest number of correspondence. And certainly, Roger, that's something that I can relate to. Every time we have you on this show, and we talk about such a sensitive and private issue, it seems to elicit a great deal of feedback, even above and beyond that which we're used to. And so, it's an important issue, obviously, to go without saying. Reproduction and the replication of our people is obviously something that we can't do without. I know there is a certain thread pertaining to this conversation that you and Keith would like to expound upon before we run out of time this evening. But before y'all get into that, I would just like to ask you one question for me, perhaps in summation, is how should the people listening to this radio program tonight conduct themselves in their relationships in a way that would counteract the effects of radical feminism and its role in the so-called sexual revolution?
That's a very difficult question, and it's not the kind of thing I usually do. I'll say, for Christian listeners out there, you might want to find out about something called Christian courtship, which is practiced in certain religious communities where parents are involved in their children's dating and so forth, and have a role to play in courtship. If you're on your own, girls could do worse than to read Wendy Shalit, the advocate of feminine modesty. She wrote a good book once called A Return to Modesty. If you're a guy looking for dating advice, there's one dating guru who is more interested in teaching guys to find good wives than in teaching them how to pick up girls at the bar. He's a guy named Tom Hodges who calls himself Doc Love. He's got a website, doclove.com, and he's got advice that could be useful to a lot of guys.
I guess, Roger, and thank you for offering those recommendations. I guess a better way to have asked the question to not put you on such of a spot would have been, what are the benefits of traditional courtship and having large families compared to the scene today of trying to put as many notches on your bedpost as possible? I guess that would have been a better way to ask.
Yeah.
That.
Oh,
Go ahead.
The people who are trying to score, the funny thing is they don't seem very happy. people with strong family ties are almost always happier than people who make pleasure the end purpose of their dating life.
And it goes without saying, if we cut out radical feminism and the whole new sexual revolution identity, we have larger families.
Yes.
Our posterity is enabled, and we have, the race endures.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's what we were talking about once before with Dr. Devlin. Whites generally believe in what's called high investment parenting.
Yes.
And that's why the race has moved forward, and we are the achievers in society for the most part. When you don't have high investment parenting, that's exactly what you're talking about when, you know, you get as many notches on your bedpost as possible. You mate with this wide variety, and of course, that precludes you from being much of a factor as a male in the raising of those children, which is, exactly what we see in a large segment of the minority population in America and elsewhere.
Correct.
Not to mention divorce.
You know, a lot of guys want to be good parents and are not allowed to because the judge has ordered them to stay away from their children.
And of course,
that's another factor in the destruction of the nuclear family, the divorce debacle that we have in America that was brought on initially by the advent of no-fault divorce.
Yes.
A whole nother topic, though, but
still
closely related. But, Keith, I know before we run out of time with Devlin in this first hour, there was something y'all were talking about during the break that we should touch upon.
Well, we were talking about Paul Ehrlich's book, The Population Bomb, and, again, like Marcuse, it's something that probably interests intellectuals more than the average person in the street. But what has happened as a result of that book and other liberal commentaries on the birth rate and on courtship and marriage and things like this is that it is now considered virtuous to have children. I mean, not to have children. In other words, if you don't have children, in fact, I read something in the Drudge Report recently that said that if you wanted to reduce your carbon footprint, the most important thing that you could do would be not to have children. And much more
babies are bad for the environment. How do you like that?
Anything else? What is that, Doctor?
Babies are bad for the environment. Yes.
Oh, exactly. And, of course, everybody would blindly ignore that except some wigged-out, guilty white liberal.
Exactly. When I was teaching, I had students, the white students all believed that the world was overpopulated and that this was a terrible problem. Now, in the nations which are reproducing the most rapidly, which are all in Africa or the Muslim world, they all seem to be worried about this. it's a white idea.
The world was a lot better off when basically the white population, as it was in 1960, was 25% of the world's population than in today's world, where we're 14 and projected to go down to 9%. And it's all because, apparently, liberalism sickens and kills every institution that embraces it and every group of people that embraces it. And, of course, the only people that really believe in liberalism are whites, liberals.
Yes,
There are other groups that give lip service to believing in it, but, of course, when it comes to their own interests as a group, liberalism is always jettisoned if it gets in the way of those group interests.
Certainly. Both white liberals and blacks are in favor of racial preferences for blacks, but the way they think is entirely different. White liberals have this funny kind of altruistic sense that they should make sacrifices, and blacks are a much more healthy race, really, just directly pursuing their own interests.
Right, and it's, it makes it extremely difficult in this world, liberalism generally, for white couples, married couples, to have children. For example, in a place like Memphis, Tennessee, where due to liberal initiatives like school integration and busing, the public schools are out of the question for a conscientious parent. Yeah. This means that white couples intentionally limit the size of their families.
Yes.
Because otherwise, you'd be throwing them into a virtual black hole of Calcutta for education.
Yes.
And, see, liberalism generally works in that way to depress white birth rates, I think. Would you not say so, Dr. Devlin?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, I would urge all parents to actually homeschool children fairly cheaply, possibly for not much more than you would pay for a private school. I would urge people to do that if at all possible.
Well, it's good, but then on the other hand, you know, colleges and universities are run by liberals in America.
Yeah,
that'd be
largely
a fair statement, Doctor.
Oh, yes, yes, 95%.
And, of course, they don't give the same credence and credibility to homeschool children as they do to people that come from traditional schools, public schools in
particular. I hope and believe that that's going to change. First of all, there is just a lot of hard evidence that homeschooled kids do well. There is now one school that is basically designed for homeschooled kids. It's called Patrick Henry in Virginia. 85% of the student body is homeschooled. Stephen Baskerville teaches there. And
you know,
I think there will be more. There will be more colleges like this in the future.
Yeah,
but
Stephen
as long as liberals are in charge and liberals disapprove of any type of manifestation of conservatism like homeschooling, we've still got a problem, don't we, Doctor?
Well, yeah, I think the best thing to do is to go our own way. Eventually, the mainstream colleges are not going to be able to make it. I think they're too bureaucratic. They're too expensive. They're probably going to wither away.
Well, you know, I was talking with James a while back about how, you know, in my generation, if somebody in the area where we live went to Harvard or Yale, the chances are almost 9 to 1 that they're a minority group member.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, these people are getting down, you know, at the bottom of the class at those places. And at some point, somebody's going to recognize that the emperor has no clothes and that all these Harvard and Yale graduates really aren't that smart compared to other people.
Except for people like Virginia Abernathy, who was on our show last week. She's the exception, but unfortunately, we're out of time. You mentioned Dr. Stephen Baskerville, Dr. Devlin,
yes,
a great guy. He's been a guest on this program a couple of times. It's good to know he's doing well and doing a good job applying himself in an important endeavor. And you're talking about homeschooling students. I'm a product of that schooling system.
I didn't know that.
And here we are. Here I am with the political cesspool. So yeah, it's led to something, I would say. But, Dr. Devlin, we are flat out of time. I want to thank you again for shedding
all
light
right
on the most important an intimate subject that all of our people should be thinking about, and in addition to all of the other issues that we address on this radio program. Check him out on the web. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. F. Roger Devlin, it's always our pleasure to be with you, sir, and we look forward to the next time already.
I enjoyed it.
Dr. Devlin, everyone, and good luck with your interview. Keith Alexander and I will be back when the second hour continues right after these words from our sponsors and a burst of national news. You're listening to the Political Cesspool on the Liberty News Radio Network.
1 hour down and two to go. Stay tuned. Hour number two of the Political Cesspool comes your way right after these messages.
And Harv leaped to his feet and says, "Something's got a hold on me."
Yow!
The day the squirrel went berserk in the first self-righteous church. In that sleeping little town of Pascagoula, it was a fight for survival that broke out in revival. They were jumping pews and shouting hallelujah. Well, Harv hit the aisles dancing and screaming. Some thought he had religion, others thought he had a demon. And Harv thought he had a weed eater loose in his fruit and blooms. He fell to his knees to plead and beg, and the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room, all the way down to the Amen.